Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
To quickly sway back to last month where I mentioned about Easter and chocolate films, and I very confidently said that there would be more films about chocolate than there were about Easter. I think I was wrong.
I couldn't
get that far. I did a bit of research, and there's films that feature chocolate, like chocolate is in there, but it's not by any means the main part of the film. And I think Easter, because there's been more about Christ dying than there is about chocolate.
Yeah, but you see, the thing is though, Chris, if there was potential, it would have been done by someone by now, wouldn't it, really?
That's so true.
You know, but well done for looking, though. Well done for checking.
I mean, yeah, it was quite depressing. But, you know, when you go down the rabbit hole. Oh, excuse the pun. Down the rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't really find much. So, yeah, apologies if I angered anyone with my boastful claim that there were more chocolate films than Easter films. Because
there could be someone very disappointed out there now, Chris. You never know.
Yes. Or there could be a filmmaker out there now just absolutely driven to make as many chocolate films as they can to prove me right. In which case, fair play. Go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we've inspired someone then.
Through our chocolate grandstanding. So if this is your first time to Film Club, welcome. Everyone here is welcome, as we've said. We review films across the board. That's from your biggest blockbuster movies to your streaming films that are available on Netflix and Amazon Prime to your independent cinema. So that's filmmakers making their very first movies, short films, indie films. And then we finish it up with a look back at a classic film, which we call the Nostalgia Pick. And this month's Nostalgia Pick is not a secret because I put it out there on social media saying that we were reviewing Mad Max. And this is because they are releasing Furiosa next month. Yeah. Is that right, Brian? You're my...
next month. Yeah, as far as I'm aware. That's right.
You're my conduit into all things theatrical. Yeah. And so, yeah, listeners, you will hear Brian start the show off by reviewing some of the theatrical releases, that is films that are in cinemas right now as of recording or very very soon. And yeah, so we've got a very varied selection of films to be reviewed on this show, but we're starting with one that we reviewed its predecessor, its origin film, not long ago on the podcast, which we reviewed the classic sci-fi comedy Ghostbusters. But we're here with a new entry into that catalogue called Frozen Empire. Brian, is this going to give me chills or is this going to freeze me over? Do you see what I did there? I tried to do something and that was off the cuff.
It's very good. I like that. That's good. Yeah, it's got potential.
I'm not sure it will stay in.
Well, yeah. Look, it's there. You've got the choice, haven't you, when the time comes? Yeah, look, it's a great brand, isn't it? You know, it's one of the few brands that I'm a fan of. Ghostbusters, it started in the 1980s, which was the birth of the franchise movie, wasn't it? I mean, during the 80s, we had Lethal Weapon, we had Rambo, we had Indiana Jones, you know. So it came at a time when the concept was becoming accepted. Now, this latest installment, directed by Gil Kenan, starring Paul Rudd, Carey Coon, Dan Aykroyd, Finn Wolfhard, and McKenna Grace. This is the fifth installment in the Ghostbusters franchise. And it takes the story back to its origins, really. The next generation of Ghostbusters are now operating from their historic base in a New York fire station. The team consists of seismologist Gary Gruberson, his girlfriend Carrie Spengler, and her children Trevor and Phoebe. The offspring of Egon Spengler have inherited his ghostbusting genes as they cause mayhem in Hell's Kitchen. However, the wrath of Mayor Peck forces Phoebe off active duty until she becomes a legal adult. She seeks solace in a game of chess and encounters the ghostly apparition of Melody, another chess player who died in a fire. Meanwhile, Founding Father Ray Stantz, begins collecting cursed objects for examination. Nadim Razmadi sells him a mysterious brass orb left to him by his grandmother. It soon unleashes terrifying powers and spirits from the past. Now, Frozen Empire, if we can use its subtitle, is undoubtedly a spectacular visual treat that develops the original technology really well. So we have a representation of the original ghosts from the first movie still there, but enhanced, so that's good. There are some welcome cameos that remind the audience of the brand's lineage. Fusing past and present is pulled off with aplomb and gives the narrative proper structure. However, there's a feeling it veers too far from its true purpose. There are scenes reminiscent of Ghost, and sections of the plot feel like they've been lifted from an Indiana Jones script. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it doesn't have to borrow from other films in quite such an obvious way. Parts of the film are quite scary. And you know, Chris, I don't scare easily, do I?
I was going to ask you about this, Brian, because the director, one of the previous films they've done was Poltergeist, and that made me think maybe they were coming at this with quite a story. And when we did review the first Ghostbusters film, it did have some quite scary elements. This horror is definitely in there as a genre.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is a bit on that line, is it?
Yeah, I think I would say it is. You see, maybe watching the original movie at 40 years distance, maybe that part of it's worn off, because I always saw Ghostbusters as a kind of a knockabout comedy action movie with special effects, you know. But it's kind of, to me, it's branching. I'm not suggesting this is a bad thing in any way. But as you've mentioned about the director, Gil Kenan, you can see where it comes from. But it's moving more authentically into horror rather. I mean, generically, I would call this an action movie. Right, but now it's moving more towards horror. If this is anything to go by, it's very well done. No question it's well done. But to me, there's less, I don't know, there's less comedy there. There's less banter. It's not as prevalent as it used to be. But, you know, even so, busting will still make you feel good, as the song goes. So, you know, good entertainment. Very good entertainment. Nevertheless.
Cause, yeah, because they've had a few outings. You know, there was the one before this with Rudd in it, and then there was the female cast. That was very comedy driven. Like, it was really going for the laughs. And as you say, I think when people think nostalgically about Ghostbusters, you do remember the gags and the jokes. I think because of like Bill Murray and things like that, that you kind of put it in that sphere. But yeah, like I said, when I watched it, I was surprised at how much of it was veering into that horror side. And there are bits that did genuinely terrify me as a kid. I remember in, I think it's the second one with the painting, that it was like, oh God, that was terrifying. So I think there is, it's playing on, it's able to play on those genres. It's able to use those aspects. But like you say, I think they are also needing to create these action spectacles to get people into the cinemas, because otherwise it would just be like, oh, okay, you're making a horror film, right? Yeah. That's going to really limit your audience then.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's raising the bar higher and higher. That's what all filmmakers have to do. They have to up the ante, because otherwise people won't go out and watch it. If people don't go out and watch it, it won't make money. So, you know, it's that simple equation, isn't it? They have to push those boundaries even further. But look, it's a legitimate place for the brand to go into horror more, because look, ghosts, poltergeists, horror, you know, it's in the same bag, isn't it, to be fair. But, you know, I suppose I've conceptualized Ghostbusters over the years, because, you know, it comes from what I think was a great period for filmmaking in the 80s, you know. I suppose in my own mind, I'd prefer it to sort of stay more there. But as you say, I mean, it's perception, isn't it? You know, I mean, I'd not watched Ghostbusters, the first film, until we reviewed it on the podcast, and it didn't strike me that way. But I'm just trying to think back to how it impacted on me when I first saw it. But 40 years, it doesn't seem like 40 years, Chris, since the first one. Scary, really.
That's scary. That's the scary
bit. That's scary.
Isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's scary.
That's the scary bit for everyone, is how old we were all getting.
Yeah. I know. But a very good film, though. Great fun to watch. So great entertainment.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, if you've seen Frozen Empire, feel free to send us your reviews and your comments. It's in cinemas now, likely to do good business, I would have thought. But you never know with these things sometimes.
Could go straight to streaming. You know,
straight to streaming. Luckily, this next film didn't do that, because it's a biography of Amy Winehouse. And as is the new standard of UK Film Club, we have a clip. I'm going to play a clip for everyone. Here we go. Wow.
I don't write songs to be famous. I write songs because I don't know what I'd do if I didn't. I want people to hear my voice. And just forget their troubles. You gotta remember, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Amy Winehouse!
I wanna be remembered for just being me.
Well, there you go. Back to black. And I ain't no Spice Girl. That is definitely going to be my catchphrase moving forward.
Yeah, it's a good line. I have to say, though, before we get into the review of Back to Black, I saw Back to Black at the Everyman Cinema for the first time. I'd never been before. And it's brilliant. You walk through the doors, it's like a 70s time warp. You know, I could feel myself breaking out in pimples when I walked through the door. It was amazing. Nice deep settees and armchairs to sit in. They serve you drinks and food, and it's great.
Brian, right, let me stop you there. What do they serve you? Break it down. What food did you have? What drinks did you have?
Well, I mean, just beers, really. I mean, they've got a range of beers.
Sold. I'm sold.
it's brilliant. It's great. Obviously, the screens aren't as big, and there aren't as many screens in individual cinemas, but a great way to watch a film in the cinema. It's the old-fashioned approach with a few enhancements. That's not to say there aren't other cinema chains out there. We know that. But a great way to watch a film, and it's the old way of doing it. And I always say, Chris, that some things are done better the old-fashioned way.
I think... The thing is about, we do this theatrical section of the show because we want to promote films at cinemas, and the cinema experience is so key. Everyone has that, well, everyone who's a film fan will have that warm, fuzzy feeling of going to the cinema and being lost in that. And I think back to some of my favourite cinema experiences, and they are the ones that were a bit more of a treat. They are the ones that are a bit more like where you've got a sofa and you've got a table and things like that. By the way, guys, anyone listening, we are not affiliated with Everyman Cinema, by the way. We're just, Brian just had a nice experience, so we're just giving them a shout out. Other cinemas are available, but fantastic. You had such a great experience. But let's hear about the film. I mean, what a film to go and see on the big screen.
Yeah, that's right. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson, starring Marisa Abella, Eddie Marson, Leslie Manville, Jack O'Connell, and Judith Cowan. So this is the story of the brilliant but flawed genius of Amy Winehouse. We probably think we know Amy's story because she lived and died in the public eye and can only really judge the film on the personal view we've each formed of her. For those unfamiliar, let's just recap. The film begins in her late teens as Amy is showing real promise as a singer-songwriter. Dad Mitch is a cab driver and part-time crooner, excited by his daughter's potential. Mum Janice is similarly expectant, but stressed by her lifestyle, while adored Nan Cynthia is Amy's inspiration. She's signed by 19 Management and releases her debut album called Frank. Meanwhile, Amy meets Blake Fielder Civil and sets off a chain of events that lead to the landmark album Back to Black. Now, Marisa Abella tries so hard to sound like Amy, which is an impossible task and only weakens the film, in my opinion. Her mannerisms are exaggerated, and she looks too healthy to play a woman wrecked by addiction. Jack O'Connell is so ripped he should be in an exercise video. That's not to suggest any actor should endanger their health to play a role. It only highlights the limitations of all biopics. Blake Fielder Civil is given a personality makeover. He's portrayed as a lovable rogue, a rough diamond with a bad habit. The reality seems different, particularly as Fielder Civil actually admitted that he got Amy into hard drugs in the first place, which is the underlying tone of the film. It's about addiction. So, in conclusion, I think it's okay. It does the job. It gets an extra star for me for showcasing a unique talent. A bit like the Bob Marley biopic, One Love.
I was going to say, we're in familiar territory. This year we've been doing quite a few, been doing quite a few of these musical biopics and things like that. And they don't seem to be hitting the dizzying heights because we used to have a period, you know, when you had things like Walk the Line, there was Bray.
Yeah,
there were so many great kind of biopics of musical legends that we're not, to be fair, I enjoyed Elvis. I thought Elvis was great. You've reviewed a few recently. You sort of said they've been playing a bit safe or been a bit clinical or whatever. Yeah. So, yeah, interesting.
You know, but that's where it kind of it works because they're showcasing a fantastic talent, you know, that she died at the age of 27. It's, in a way, it's a very sad film. And so is One Love, the Bob Marley biopic, because they both died so young. And you felt that they had so much more to give. You know, you think about what Amy could have been doing now if she was still alive, and she'd only be 41. Wow. You know, she'd probably be acting now. I think she would have made a great actor. But, you know, it wasn't to be. And it just leaves you wondering what might have been. One of the worst things in life is wasted talent. But, you know, you look at that story, you look at a story in retrospect, and again, we only see it through TV, through media. We feel, as I said at the beginning of the review, we feel like we know her story, but I don't feel it goes very far away from what you see in the tabloids and what was portrayed in newsreels, newsreel footage, you know? So I don't feel it's getting us much further. I don't feel like we know her any better. you know.
Did you watch the Asif Kapadia documentary?
I did, yes.
Yeah, I remember finding that very enthralling. Like, it was very difficult to watch, but it was also really powerful. Yeah. And it really, that felt like it did get into all the grimy depths of everything.
Yeah. What was interesting about that was that, I mean, anything about Amy Winehouse, anything about musicians and singers fascinates me. Any documentary that charts someone's life is, you know, really roots me to the spot. I just love it. Asa Kapadia's film, I believe, won an Oscar, didn't it, as well? I mean, it was very highly regarded.
He's great, Asa Kapadia. I think his filmmaking's really great. If you haven't seen Senna, I think I remember Amy being particularly affecting.
It was. But what's interesting about that is how it divided opinion, particularly where people close to Amy were concerned, where her family was concerned. And there was, I'd also direct you and listeners to a documentary called Finding Amy, which you might still be able to find on BBC iPlayer, which kind of sets a contrary view. It doesn't deviate too far, but it kind of gives you another view of things. But it just convinces me, though, that it depends who you talk to. You know, to get a truly objective account of someone's life, particularly someone like Amy Winehouse, I don't think is easy.
No.
So yeah, I feel that maybe it's arrived too soon after the event that Amy died in 2011, and that because there's too little distance between then and now, maybe we don't see her in enough perspective, true perspective, so it gives you a proper idea. You mentioned Walk the Line, the autobiography of Johnny Cash. I mean, that was made a fair number of years after he died, and I think it was possibly better as a result, but...
Yeah, I wonder. I think there's probably a pressure, I think, from studios to go, oh, we should be the ones to do this one. Like, let's do it, like, you know, sooner. And they've realized that there's appetite. And also, obviously, you know, the fans of that artist are going to want to see the film. Yeah. So they don't want to, like, leave it too long.
Yeah.
But I think, like you say, sometimes maybe it needs more distance so that they can do it a bit more truer without hurting people's, you know, feelings.
Yeah.
And also, there's that sense of letting the myth and the mythology kind of like evolve about that person, because there might be things about them that don't really sort of make much sense in the moment, but later on kind of, yeah. So it's a difficult balance to find, but yeah, I understand where these things come from. But
yeah
interesting.
It's got some really brutal reviews, though. One reviewer I read gave it 1 star, which I think is really unfair. I don't think it's quite that bad. You know, it's about opinions, as we said at the very top of the show. It's about opinions. But I think you can be really harsh. And to make those number of assumptions that it doesn't portray that effectively, I mean, I gave it 3 stars. I think it got the extra star because of the music, because of the soundtrack. But even so, it was nowhere near that bad. But you know, it's what people think, you know. But it's a film worth watching. It's a film worth going out to see, definitely.
Yeah, and I think, like I said before about the other docs, that if you're, or biopics, if you're a fan of the artist, then you're going to enjoy it just simply because it's spending time in their music. So it's not a bad thing.
And also, if you're a big fan, you wouldn't be quite so critical, because you just enjoy it for what it is. Because it's given you the truth up to a point. I mean, only the people closest to her would have known the truth, you know. But it's given you a measure of the truth. But it's the music. And if you love the music, you'll love the film. I think that's really what you've got to say there, you know.
Absolutely. Back to Black. So let us know what you think if you see it. One more from the theatrical releases. Don't have a clip, sadly, but The Book of Clarence, Brian.
Yes.
What about this?
Yeah. Now, here's a sleeper. Another film that will slip quietly across the radar, or I sense that it will. Written and directed by James Samuel, starring Lakeith Stanfield, David Oyelowo, James McAvoy, and Benedict Cumberbatch. It's an alternative version of the Gospels. It works on the premise that one of the apostles, Thomas, had a twin brother called Clarence. He's a bit of a chancer and owes money to the local heavy, Jediah the Terrible. Things get more complicated when Clarence falls in love with Jediah's sister Verinia. When news breaks of Jesus as the new Messiah, he seeks an opportunity. Clarence tries and fails to become the 13th apostle. But with trusty sidekick Elijah on hand, he has a cunning plan to become the new Messiah and perform miracles. This is a very solid piece of filmmaking. Devout Christians should steer clear of this, as they might find it offensive. But approach it with an open mind, and it's a very entertaining film. Well acted, the cinematography is excellent. There's a great chariot race at the beginning as well. And it's great, particularly if you're a fan of 70s soul music. And I am personally, so it was all right by me. But it's a film that won't be running at the cinema for too long. My local multiplex only has one showing a day, so get it whilst you can. But this is good stuff. It works. And if you're prepared to give it a chance, have an open mind, it presents an alternative version. It's saying, what if? But it's well worth a go.
Yeah, I watched the trailer, and it's those sort of things. I like someone doing something different. You know, we haven't had this film before, right? This is a new story to have been told, and I think that's powerful. But is it a cinema film? Do you feel that is it visually cinematic?
Yes, I think it is. Yeah, it really is. It works well on a big screen. As I say, because of the subject matter, I don't think it's going to do great business. But I think it works on the big screen. It works on a cinema. It's, you know, some might view it as controversial. Some have thrown sort of blasphemy at it. You know, I think that's probably a bit much. But you may see it that way. It depends on your religious beliefs and your spiritual beliefs. But, you know, if you look at the greatest story ever told, you look at the Gospels, you look at the Bible, and you examine the life of Jesus, you know, it is possible there could be people around at that time who were like Clarence, who were chancers, who thought they could make a buck or two, you know. And whilst it's kind of portraying the Gospels, but it's kind of bolting an extra story onto the fringes, and that works okay. But as I say, I think you need an open mind, and it's unfortunately, it's not going to do. That's why I think it's going to fly under the radar. It's going to be one of those type of films. But it deserves a lot of credit for tackling what could be a touchy subject for people and producing something that's really valid and artistically sound, and it works. But, you know, I would understand if people didn't take kindly to it, because it's coming back to the big O, opinions again, isn't it?
It is. And in your opinion, what star rating out of 5?
I gave it 3, actually.
3, yeah. I think that's basically both the last two films have been on average with the general public, from what it seems. So, yeah, no, one of those films, at least, is something original, something different. Let us know what you think if you do go and see The Book of Clarence. Currently at cinemas, but as Brian says, fairly limited. So you might probably catch it on streaming, which is where we're heading now. Did you see what I did there? I thought segues would be a lot smoother if I stopped to, you know, highlight them. I talk about my segues so much that they're not segues anymore.
Maybe
so.
you ought to let the listeners work it out themselves, Chris.
I should do. They should go, oh, that was clever. But I won't know, Brian. That's the trouble. I won't. No one messages in to say, oh, good segue.
I know. You see, you need that feedback. We need feedback, don't we?
Yeah, segue feedback.
But your segues are getting better, I must say.
They are getting better.
They're very slick and very smooth.
Well, where are we now? This is episode official 14, but we've done about 16 of Film Club. So I'm getting there. It took me over a year, but we're getting there.
You've got to play yourself in, haven't you? You know.
Yeah, we're playing the long game here. It's fine. We are going now to our streaming pick of the month. So this is a film that is available on a streaming platform, and this month, which is quite familiar for us, is Netflix again, because they're very good at telling us what's coming out. And it is a documentary, though. We don't often do too many documentaries, but we are happy to, more than happy to. And I should probably say this at the top of the show. I know Amber does that on Gay, actually. She does that, spoiler warning, kind of like for the whole show, but I kind of forget. But I'm going to say spoiler warning, and the reason for that is I feel this film is going to be quite difficult to talk about, this documentary, without spoilers, because it's a documentary. So we're going to talk about some stuff. So if you don't want to know what happens in what Jennifer did, maybe go and watch it and then come back to this part of the podcast, or or skip it. Skip this review. But I don't really want you to do that because it affects our numbers and things. So maybe just mute it. Go do something. Yeah. It's probably going to be about 5-10 minutes. So you know, make a cup of tea. Mow the lawn. Can you mow the lawn in 10 minutes? Probably not. That's quite
depends how big the lawn is, though, doesn't it?
That's really true. Yeah. I'm rambling. What Jennifer Did, documentary written and directed by Jenny Popplewell, is a very interesting. It's one of these kind of true crime stories. Mm. So I know they're very popular with Netflix viewers, and often they're done in series. So you have like 10 episodes, and they'll go through the whole thing. But with this, it's quite unique because it's done all within 127 minutes. So yeah, it's a feature length film, and we find a story presented whereby a daughter calls 911 and she gives a report that there's been shooting in her house, and we learn that her mother and father have both been shot, and we then are witness to the case, the investigation. Now, as you might be aware of, the title is What Jennifer Did. Jennifer is the daughter. We learn that very on. So, spoilers, but she is involved. There's a way, I can't really get around this, but there's more to it than what she's saying. And even the poster, if you see the poster, there's two halves of her face in different lights. Like, they make it quite clear that she's clearly got something to do with it. Through the investigation, we're given footage of her actual interviews with the police department. It's based in Canada. And we also get talking head kind of interviews with some of the cops that were involved and people that knew Jennifer or knew the parents and things. And yeah, over the course of less than 90 minutes, you piece together everything that happens, basically. And that's quite unique for a true crime thing. Quite a lot of these true crime things are very much like, oh, this is sort of what happened, but we don't really know. Yeah, it may be sort of left unsolved sort of thing. But with this, it was kind of tidied up pretty well in terms of everything that happened. It's quite, I found it quite gripping. What about you, Brian? What do you think of what Jennifer did?
No, I think it was really gripping and quite chilling as well. Very well presented. I love these sort of things, murder mystery documentaries, you know. But the best ones put you, the viewer, into the detective's position, right? So you straight away you feel right now. You're being presented with all the evidence. You're watching the interviews, and you're being told this is what happened. What do you think? You know, where does this take us? And I mean, you mentioned something about the neatness, the way it was compact. And all put into 90 minutes, and it does that very well. But it methodically builds the case and shows you how they follow different lines of inquiry, which I liked as well. But, you know, I was totally in it, you know, completely in it. When she was describing, I mean, a lot of it really is down to the interviews, really, isn't it? And the point at which they found contrary evidence that disproved her account, which I think was probably key. Obviously, we won't say what that contrary evidence was, but it got to that point. And then they brought in somebody called a truth analysis expert. Do you know the part I mean? Where it got really kind of aggressive and combative because they knew they could, because they had this evidence that disproved what she was saying. So the evolution of the case and the influence of introducing new evidence and then taking Jennifer off in a different direction and putting her in a position where she has to fess up and tell the truth. But it's just getting from the beginning where they've got somebody who's got a father who had a shotgun wound to the head, but the mother was dead, and they had to interview her from there, and she delivers her story, her version of what happened. And then you find yourself thinking, oh, she couldn't possibly have done that. How could she have done that, you know, when she was tied to the banister? All that sort of thing. So I was completely into it. You know, I was completely in it. I was a detective. You know, I was flashing a badge saying, what about this? What about that? Do you know what I mean? But you see, some documentaries do that a lot better than others. But this documentary manages to put you in the time and the place, which is what I often say about films in general, but particularly documentaries, where they put you there at the scene. They put you in that room whilst that interview is going on. very, very good, very impressive, really enjoyable, and it's one to watch, definitely.
Yeah, I agree. The only slight aspect, and this happens quite a lot in these kind of true crime things, that I didn't really enjoy was they fall into melodrama, like, because they kind of start using slow-mo and they get the character, the interviewees to say sort of really hyperbolic comments about the things, and you kind of go, okay, like, but that, I think it does, and that, not to generalize, it does feel like an American thing, or at least a, you know, North American thing, where it's like, oh, okay, yeah, they know how to reel you in. But as we've both admitted, it worked, right? Because we were reeled in and we were on it. But yeah, you have to kind of get into that tone of the film. Yeah. And also, as I said, anyone that's read the title or seen the poster or both will go in knowing that there's definitely a twist coming.
Oh,
that
yeah, of course.
You
yeah.
do spend the first half of the film almost, like you say, with your detective brain on, going, okay, but there's clearly going to be some, you know, inaccuracies here. So you're sort of looking for them. Yeah. And yeah, no, I liked it. I say I really liked the fact that it was compact into one thing. It wasn't like, all right, now I've got to watch 2-3 series of this ongoing story.
You do it in one hit, don't you? You get it in one hit. That's
and also, she's... obviously the daughter of her parents, and as a father with two daughters, it left me quite worried, I'll be honest. I was like, oh god.
Well, I'd say it's something though, it would make a very good feature film as well.
Oh, I did think that too. I was like, that's not, I can't be too far away. Obviously, probably given if this documentary is successful, they probably will just commission a film as well, but
I think it would work really well as a film, and this is kind of a taster for it. But you know, that's what's I kind of, I suppose in some ways a bit troubling, because look, we're all entertained by crime, aren't we? Crime is a big part of the movies, isn't it? We're seeing one kind of crime perpetrated or another, aren't we? But this one just happens to be true, and it's absolutely riveting when it's done properly and it's done well. So yeah, I think feature film can't be far away, really can't.
Yeah. Nope, check it out. What Jennifer Did on Netflix from the date you're listening to this. It's already on there. As with all Netflix films, you probably have to search for it because it's very difficult to find things. But
tell me about it. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine it'll come off too soon as well. I think it's one of their own, so that tends to stay on there for quite some time. But yeah, that's our streaming pick for this month. Let us know if you do watch it. Because we're now moving to the indie section of our show, which is where we review a selection of independently made films that were sent to us. These have been specifically sent to us, and they've asked us to review them, and we are happy to oblige. Very happy to oblige. And as luck would have it, I have clips from all of them. We're doing four in this episode. Yeah. We've got clips from all of them. So to get us started, I will play a clip from the first film, which is called Rosetta Stone.
All right. This is it. Senior year. My last chance to make him work.
You ready to go all the way?
The fuck you just say to me? You trying to fuck me or something, bro?
No. Go all the way, like the school year, like the football season, yeah?
I don't even play fucking football, bro.
That kid is so fucking weird.
So since when did you become friends with Edward?
I am not friends with the weird kid.
Hey.
Jesus, fuck.
He likes mixing words that no one really understands in French and in English?
J.D. Sweet Home.
I think this kid could be useful after all.
I know that you're quite the pothead. I always wanted to try it.
If you send me your pictures of the packet, I'll give you half the G.
Hitting it is, breathing it in, right?
No, hit it means take your dick out and fuck it.
By sitting down.
Whoa, dude, what are you doing?
You said that I could drink out of it as long as I plan on finishing it, right?
Right now you're at an F. And you're probably going to have to get a B on the final test.
A B? Does that even sound possible to get a B?
You know who else was cut some slack? O.J. Simpson.
Oh, God.
All right?
You know I need to graduate, okay? I need to get as far away as possible from my fucking dad.
So you're having Edward come over so you can copy off of him? Well, Ryan.
It's not that bad when you get to know him.
I run a tight ship in my classroom.
I have weed in your car. We have to go now.
You knew what will happen to me in prison?
Yes, dude. You'd be having sex. It'd be great.
There we go. I should have warned everyone beforehand. A lot of the clips tonight have got expletives in. So,
are you going to bleep it out?
Yeah, no, I'm probably going to leave it in. We just put the expletive tag on now. But yeah, apologies if that offended anyone. But I do feel that you need to hear that clip to really understand the tone of the film, because it really gives you a good insight as to what you're dealing with here. And the best kind of ballpark that I would suggest anyone work with is American Pie. It's that sort of genre film. Yeah. And you can tell they're from like the punk rock soundtrack, stoner kind of comedy approach. And Rosetta Stone, written and directed by Benjamin Vomastek. And we asked to review this film. I personally have a big affinity for these sort of films because I was a teenager when American Pie was coming out, and I watched a lot of the films like that, Road Trip, and things like those sort of films. They're a piece of time, I think, where they make sense, because if you are of that age, it makes sense. And now watching this in my mid to late 30s, it's quite a different experience, because you're very much kind of going, guys, you're making some bad decisions there.
You're very grown up now, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm more worried about, like, this is the life that my kids are going to go into. But it was also a nice throwback to go back and spend some time. So to give you a gist of the story, there are two main characters. There's Edward, who is potentially on the autistic scale. I think they mentioned in the bio that he's on the autistic scale. And very, very smart, but socially awkward. And he kind of wants to have more life experiences. And in particular, he wants to try drugs and he wants to have sex. And he doesn't really know how to sort of do either of those things, and relies on the help of a very cool but very failing student, Ryan, who is good at things like rolling joints, but not so good at passing tests. So he kind of uses Edward to help him pass the class because he wants to get his high school diploma. And that's essentially the setup. These two kids who wouldn't normally spend much time together do, and alas, a friendship is born. I don't think it's a spoiler to say that they do start to get on and have fun. But as with all high school style films, lots and lots of things happen along the way to upset that journey. What did you think of Rosetta Stoned, Brian?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, look, you mentioned American Pie. That's obviously the template for the film, isn't it? But there's nothing wrong with that. You know, all filmmakers have their influences, as we said before. I like the idea of this unlikely friendship developing between Ryan, who's this cool pothead who, as far as Edward's concerned, is the guy with the experience, who's good with women, and he knows stuff, he knows how to do drugs, and that's what draws the pair together. And the trade-off is that, you know, he'll say, dude, I'll give you all this stuff if you help me with my French coursework. And that kind of initial trade-off leads to a friendship, and a genuine friendship by the end. And I think it's quite touching in some ways. You know, it's got a very good heart. It has its moments. Some funny lines, one of which was actually in the clip that you played right at the very beginning of the film, when he asked one of the other kids if he was going all the way. And that's symptomatic of his social awkwardness, how he gets things wrong, which I thought was a good line. I liked it. It was good. It was good fun. They got a limited budget, obviously, but they make it work.
Yeah, very actually impressive for what they do. It was a 30K budget, I believe.
Yeah.
And for a feature length that's this not polished. Polished is the wrong word, but including enough elements to make it deserve a feature. Because sometimes we watch features and go, do you know what, that should have been a short. This actually worked well as a feature because you needed that length of time to see their friendship blossom and go through all the normal trials and tribulations that they do. And 30K budget, it's very impressive. And they use the scenes well because that's another thing that bugs me. Sometimes the independent filmmakers will do, oh, we're going to have like 15,000 locations in our film. You're like, yeah, but you don't have the budget for that. Whereas with this, I think they use the school really.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Well, so you are moving location, but you're not really. Yeah. And I thought it was really good. The jokes were funny, but I think really, like you say, it's that relationship that's really the heartwarming part of it, that you do enjoy seeing them. And also when you get a bit more of the story, the background, like, so Ryan's got kind of like a dark background. His home life is a bit rough, like his dad and some of the things that it was. Oh, okay, there's some depth here. There's some depth into that, because obviously a stoner comedy could very easily not do that.
Yeah.
One of my favorite scenes is where they have that first spliff together, and it's just, I was just killing myself laughing. Really enjoyed that. It also reminded me of a film called 10 Things I Hate About You. I'm not sure if anyone's...
Heath Ledger.
Yeah. Wonderful film. Yeah, haven't seen that movie. That film, the soundtrack on that film is incredible. I put that up there with one of the best soundtracks of all time. 10 Things I Hate About You.
Chris, if you go back into the vaults of UK Film Review, we actually reviewed 10 Things I Hate About You on a podcast. You might not have been on it, but we did review it, and we eulogized about the film.
Well, please go back and listen to that. I will do the same. I'm pretty sure I do remember the episode, to be fair. Really good. I like how the characters were really well sketched. You had this, like Ryan being kind of like... What I liked about Ryan was that he had this problem with getting close to people and committing, and he was very quick to get rid of people. Even like he has like a girlfriend who actually is very good. She gives a really good performance. It's a bit later on in the film where she really does well. But he's really like quick to get rid of people, whereas Edward's really clingy. He wants to be around, which is kind of obviously because he's trying to be this person. He's trying to not be his socially awkward person. Really good. And obviously the title is a play on words to do with that language learning software called Rosetta Stone. I think they had a little laugh there, which is also good. My only minor criticism is the teacher of the French class. He has some great lines. There's some bits that are really funny. I think in the very end of that clip, we just cut it off, but there's a bit where his phone goes off and there's a voice note that comes over, which is quite funny.
I feel
he was given way too much leeway in terms of having these like funny anecdotes or funny parts within the classroom scenes that I just found it a bit, he's going off on another little bit that's meant to be really funny that I didn't need that as much. Like, I think once or twice would have been fine, but they kept doing it. Like, every scene he was in, he was given, like, a few minutes to just sort of make a joke scene. Yeah. And it was like, okay.
I think you're right, though. I think you've nailed it there, because he was a good character and he had some good lines, but that character would have worked a lot better if he'd been in it less often.
Yeah, yeah. So less is more, right? Make it funnier by not having so much of it.
It becomes funnier as a result, because he's only... It's like a vignette, and he sort of dives in, dives out again, and you think, oh, well, that was good, you know. So it becomes more of an effective cameo, but I think he probably, had a bit, had sort of probably more lines than he needed as a character, even though he delivered them well. But yeah, that is right.
I was fine with him. Like I said, I don't mind him if he was doing there was like the more serious scenes when he's talking to Ryan about like, you know, graduating and stuff. Like, that's fine. But it was like when they do the more of the jokey bits again and again and again. Yeah. I just found it. You've done this. Like, let's move on. But apart from that, I actually really enjoyed Rosetta Stone. I found it a nice little trip down memory lane. Even the soundtrack was decent. Because they play these punk rock songs. I think there's quite a few different songs there for you to listen to. But really, really good. If you want to check it out, Rosetta Stone has its own website, and I've checked it. It does work as of me looking right now. And it is rosettastonedthemovie.com. So yeah, you can have a look at that. They have links on there for you to rent the film or watch the film. I really recommend it. If you're a fan of things like American Pie, 10 Things I Hate About You, Road Trip, all those sort of films, then yeah, you'll enjoy it. It's a good film.
Thumbs up.
Spliffs up. we're heading now to South America. We're going to a feature film called Mambo Man, and again I have a clip, and this one is quite funky. Let's go.
Vamos a celebrar como lo vio el tiempo. Mira, vamos para casa de la trova, que ahora está tocando María Ochoa con Alma Latina.
Ah, no, perfecto, pero fíjate, yo no puedo demorarme mucho.
Está bien, viejo.
Gracias.
Muchas gracias.
Esa brisa mañanera que envuelve mi piel. Quiero volver a mi tierra donde vuelan las cenizas de mi gente.
That was just so enjoyable. Oh, wow. I was swaying. You can't see me, but I was really swaying with that. And also, yeah, so the film is not in the English language, but I think it's important sometimes to play a clip with the dialogue so that people get a sense of the tone and things like that. And Mambo Man, is an interesting film. Brian, do you want to do the description as well?
Well, look. Latin American culture is so cool, isn't it? The language, the music, the dance. You know, I went to Havana for a second then when you were playing that clip. I really did. The storyline, I think it is quite simple. It's quite straightforward. The primary character, JC, owns two loss-making farms. He also runs a famous show band specializing in the mambo, quite logically. An old friend called Roberto shows up. Currently living in Ecuador, offers him a deal. Now, he's financially struggling. The local village is struggling. So he sees this the way of generating funds. Now, this particular deal, I won't divulge too many details, but it wasn't what I necessarily expected it to be honest. So it's an ordinary man trying to make a living for his wife and family, his local community. Living in Cuba, you've got you feel that clash of styles in the film, that you've got the influence of communism, of Castro, and the fact that it is an island in the Caribbean. It has all these great sort of flavors and influences visually and orally as well. But a nice straightforward story that's, as I say, it's a man trying to make ends meet and trying to do his best for his family, but also trying to make an album as well. He's going in the meantime. But no, as you say, an interesting movie. The music makes it for me every time, that you could forgive any shortcomings in the storyline. I don't think the storyline was particularly strong, or it's not as strong as it could be, but maybe it wasn't needed because it's telling an honest story about a man trying to do his best. But
yeah, I think you're right. That was the feeling I got, was especially the first half of the film, was very light on any, there was barely any conflict. There was no like real tangible way as to where it's going. It was really setting up the idea that this character was the man of the community and he knew everyone and he'd shake hands with everyone everywhere he went. And he kind of felt a bit like the Godfather. It was like, oh, he's like the Godfather. And actually it reminded me a bit of the Godfather because it's quite that bit where he goes to Italy kind of was like quite slow, but almost a film that then becomes about, as you said, the flavor. It's like the flavor and the taste of that. You're kind of soaking in the environment. Yeah. And I was absolutely fine with that here. I was kind of like, do you know what? I'm enjoying just seeing, as I say, the music's great. They're having food. And I was just like, But there is very light on storyline in that first half. And it's only really in the second half where he starts to go towards this deal and this this trade with the jewels that someone's going to sell him. That it kind of goes, okay, there's actually like, there's a story that they want to tell here. But for me, it's one of those films. That's why the clip was quite important, actually. It kind of gives you the sense of, you can kind of bask in this feeling when you're watching this film. And it is a film to really just, in like the senses. But if you are looking for a narrative, I wouldn't say it's the strongest of films around. But I did enjoy it, and I think I enjoyed it from that sense of, it's kind of like The Godfather, but in the bit like that's maybe not quite as dramatic. And it's just got a big slow build, I think.
You know, it works because, as I say, I mean, the first thing that strikes you is that, you know, Latin American culture, there's something about it that you can't define. It's very stylish. And the visuals work, the music works. It's almost like they thought to themselves, right, we'll put a storyline in there, but we don't need to worry too much because you're drinking in the atmosphere. The visuals are great, the sounds are great. You can't go wrong in that way. But I just feel the story could have been beefed up a bit more, but that's a minor quibble because it's a nice way to spend an hour and a quarter, whatever it was. You know, it's very nice. Very nice film.
Yeah. And hats off to the filmmakers. I think it's one of those films that it feels like a passion project. It feels like there's a lot of love that's been poured into there. You could easily see it doing another story, but maybe something a bit more narrative-based. But as it is, it's a nice film to sort of gorge on, really.
It's cool.
Yeah. Mambo Man, available. I think you can rent it on Prime Video, so it's available there. But they also do have a website, mambomanfilm.com, and it's loads of information on there all about the film and the filmmakers, Mo Finney and Edicio Alejandro. So yeah, go and check it out. Go watch the trailer at least. We've reviewed it on the website as well. Go and gorge yourself on that. And let us know if you do watch it. It'd be great to hear your feedback on Mambo Man. Okay. Now, next up, we are going through it was listed when it was put through as a short film, but I actually think it's just in the realm of a feature, which is Swords of Justice 2. Now, this is what's known as a fan film. But we're going to play you a clip now from the movie, and then we're going to review it. So here we go. Swords of Justice 2.
I will protect the innocent, even if he is my enemy. But I will never forgive the traitor, even if he is my brother.
I am no traitor. I only did what's best for my tribe.
We Mongols are strong as we are smart. Sway your clan out of our path,
or the storm of the Mongol horde will decimate it.
Be on the lookout, Sir Victor. The pagans may be looming anywhere.
You there! Identify yourself!
Where's the spy?
What happened here?
Yes.
when the leaders of this great tribe decided to stay passive on the spy situation. It was he who decided to take it to his own hands.
The snake shed his skin, and we picked up his scent a long time ago.
Why do we live? Why do we fight? In this world where we cannot even control a single breath, to trample the tradition of our ancestors, or hold their legacy high above our heads.
So, Swords of Justice 2, written by, directed by, and starring Adam O'Dea. And yeah, we reviewed part one on the website, UK Film Review, before, but they've now released this part two. And it's a, as I say, it's a fan film, which is very important to sort of understand. So it's to do with a Turkish TV series known as Kurulus Osman. I didn't understand that when I was first watching it. And I was like, oh, okay, it's like a medieval film, very low budget. But then I understood that actually they were riffing on something that was pre-existing, that they were kind of, as I say, showing their love for. It's low budget, and if I was honest, the story was quite hard to grasp. But how about you, Brian? Did you grasp the story of this?
Not really, to be honest. I struggled with it. Look, it's dealing with a period of history that I absolutely know nothing about. Byzantine, Seljuk, and Mongol empires. I'm sorry to say, it's not a period of history I understand that well. And that, for me, that made me struggle with it even more. But you kind of get the vibe, don't you? You get the gist of what's happening there and why it's happening. You know, I never saw the first part, to be honest, which I think was a lot shorter, wasn't it, than the second part. One thing I would say though is that the costumes are excellent. They really look authentic. The music was, the soundtrack was really good. And they've done this literally on a shoestring of a budget. I don't know how they managed it, because I was reading online that I don't know whether it's accurate. They spent $1,000 on.
Yeah, I know it's low budget, but I'm not sure. And like I said, I was very impressed by the costumes.
Very good, though. I mean, whoever did the costumes, you know, deserves huge credit, because they look real, they look authentic, and that really helps. Overall, I thought it was a good effort when you look at what the resources they have at their disposal, and that it is paying homage to another TV series that I didn't know about either, to be honest. But a good effort. I think some of the combat sequences were a bit hesitant, where they were fighting each other, but that's a minor quibble, I guess. It's the spirit, isn't it? It's the passion they're trying to convey within the characters. So I accept that. But no, look, a good effort, but you know, it does what it sets out to do.
Yeah, I think the understanding of it obviously is going to be enhanced if you've seen the TV show. Go back and watch the first part of the film, or at least read the review on our website. The situation when films like this come along, for me, I always judge a film based on what they choose to do and what they what story they want to tell. I did find the story quite hard to grasp in this one, so that I struggled with.
Yeah,
but like I said, I like the spirit of it. I like the they were really passionate about the scenes. There was some I quite like some of the choreography in the fight scenes. There were bits that were a bit like, oh, okay, yeah, they clearly don't have the budget to do that. But there were other bits that were like, oh, wow, that's quite cool. I'd say there was one bit which really did lift me out of the film. They were shooting this scene on a bridge, but in the background you could see cars. So
I never spotted that. Really,
well, you didn't spot it. I spotted it. It was like they were shooting a scene on a bridge, and it was meant to be like obviously this sort of scene with these bygone eras. But then in the background you could just see cars, obviously near a highway or whatever. And I just thought, well, someone obviously you didn't notice it, so that's fine. Yeah. But someone chose to film that scene there and film that way. That I just thought, you didn't have to. That's not to do with budget. That's not a budget thing. That's you've not thought that through. You haven't thought. Yeah, yeah. That slipped through. You didn't. Or you've gone, do you know what? Actually, we want to use this location. We want to use that angle so much that we don't care that there's cars in the background. In which case, then I do sort of question it. But I think overall, if you're making, because I think about, what would I make a fan film about? Mm. It would be something that I absolutely adore. Like, I love Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I love Adam Sandler films, to be honest. I'd make I'd love a fan film about Happy Gilmore. If I tried to do it, it would be absolutely terrible because I just don't know what I'm doing. I don't have the same kind of, attention and passion that these guys have. Mm. They've made something that is very good with using the resources they have. Mm. I just think there is clearly room for improvement.
Also
they can think about things that aren't necessarily budgetary. It's not budgetary to go, where's the camera pointed? Because let's make sure there's nothing in the background. And also, let's not, much like the film we reviewed previously, let's not forget to tell a story. Because at the end of the day, that's what film is. It is storytelling that you can get lost in all of the fight scenes and battle scenes and all that stuff. That, don't forget that the audience is going to want some character. It is going to want some information about what's going on. Yeah. Hats off for the aesthetic, like the costumes, the music, really good. There's a few scenes where they used, I think it was stock videos, like through the woods and things like that. Mm. They actually looked really good. I was like, that actually suits really well the tone of the film. Yeah. It was a good effort, solid effort, there were bits that people will enjoy, I think.
Yeah, of course, absolutely, yeah.
Swords of Justice 2. I say we've done a review, so you can go and read that on our website. And if you want to check out more about the film, there is an Instagram page, I think, for the filmmaker, or it's for the production company. So, yeah, go to Instagram, and it's Rade Prod, so RADAE. PRDS. They're on YouTube. There's lots of clips and things for you to go and view. I think the clip we watched was public, I believe. I might be wrong on that.
Mm.
But you'd be able to search it out online and have a look and watch it for yourself. It was about 50 odd minutes, I think. So yeah, that's what made me think it's not quite as short. A short I always think as being under 50. So I think you can judge it as a fan film, really, and it won't take up too long. You can go and check it out. Moving on now to our final of the indie films, David Campier's feature film, Straight Through Crew, and we have a clip. And this one, a pre-warning, because this one is very heavy on the swears.
Ooh, right.
Get ready for this.
What the fuck was that? Romeo and Juliet at the fucking rave! Was that her plan?
No, honestly, no, she didn't even mention him.
I bet he said something to you.
No.
Bollocks!
As far as I know, he's into you.
As far as you know. What the fuck's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. Why do I always get caught up in Aiden's shit?
Because drama. Aiden's all about it.
I should call him.
Should you?
I don't know, should I?
Do what you want. I'm going to get ready for my set.
So, indie feature film from David Campion called Straight Through Crew. And yeah, I reviewed a film by David Campion a long time ago, about 2015, called Wood Falls. And really enjoyed it. Really good film. Really solid filmmaking. And it has a very similar vibe to this. So, yeah, 100% recommend checking it out. And also this. I enjoyed Straight Through Crew. And I wish I'd read the bio of this before I sort of wrote my notes, because he sums it up perfectly with two words, which is rural hedonism. That is absolutely spot on for what sounds this film is about. Yeah. So you've got this group of friends living in a small town, and a girl comes back for Christmas who used to be sort of one of the people that hung around with them. And it's all about this sort of like, where are you in your life at this point? So she's moved to London and is meant to be presenting this idea that she's doing really well. Jamie, played by Jessica Pierce, is meant to be doing really well and living the life, and all these people living back in her small hometown are kind of just like, you know, not as successful as her. It's not something she kind of sort of says. It's just sort of a vibe that sort of permeates this their group and their friendship. But she comes back for Christmas, and essentially they get together for a variety of drugs and alcohol, and it becomes a whole splurging of hedonism. You know, that is the best word. I wish I had that word in my notes. And yeah, there's lots of sort of scenes of drama between the characters. There's drug taking. Things get quite sort of odd and strange. And Jamie used to go out with a character called Aiden, played by Charles Craddock. And the two of them have this kind of like intense homecoming experience, but he's also going out with someone else. So yeah, there's a few other characters involved. They all kind of make sure they get hold of some narcotics whenever they can, and they make sure that they, you know, get to the Christmas party where they're all gonna get off their heads, as the kids say. Yeah, essentially, it's not really a Christmas film. I wouldn't say it is a Christmas film. It's set at Christmas, but it's not really a Christmas
film.
Not
a Christmas film, no.
But what it reminded me of, because you get these coming-of-age films, they're very, there's a genre upon itself. But this felt like more like a of-age film. It was like characters that are, that came of age, did all the things that they would have done. Then they went off and kind of became adults. And then they're sort of like not that far into adulthood, and they've realized, oh, yeah, well, this is sort of where we're at now. And we're still doing these things that we did when we were like 17. And all the drama and all the sort of antics that go on with that. What did you think of Straight Through Crew, Brian?
Yeah, I thought it was good. Very good. I love the title of the film as well. Straight Through Crew, that's got something about it. And you know, sometimes film titles can be a big help in helping to promote the film. And have you ever heard of a film called Straight Through Crew before? I haven't.
No, you know? I wasn't sure quite what it meant.
I'm still trying to work that one out. It's very subtle, obviously.
Well, okay, I don't know if it's going to have something to do with drug taking that's going to make us sound like two old geezers. So
I know that's the problem, isn't it? Hey, we're going to get caught out, aren't we? Yeah, I know. But no, I really enjoyed it. Very strong characters. I like the dynamic between Jamie and Aiden that's still there, because she goes off to London. She starts living a new life. Then she comes back, and the old sort of romantic tension starts to bubble away again, doesn't it, between the two of them. And I like the way that, you know, they have common friends who all feel a bit awkward. They don't know whose side to be on, you know. I think we can all recognise a situation like that, can't we, as well? But no, I think it was very well done. The two key words that you use to describe it, rural hedonism. Is it hedonism or hedonism?
Well, I say hedonism, but I think you can say whatever you want. I mean,
I'll go for hedonism if you
want. Yeah, we'll hedge our bets.
Yeah, all right then. Fair enough. Yeah. No, I thought it was very good, though. I love the way the characters interrelate with each other. I love that kind of tension that's there between them. Yeah, very good. Very impressed with it, actually.
One thing I found very impressive from a filmmaking point of view, and this is something I don't often talk about, but I notice, is filmmakers that are happier to let scenes breathe a bit. Indie filmmakers, I think maybe because of being worried about, you know, all the different aspects of what they're trying to do, often are quite heavy on the cutting. Like, they'll cut scenes and they don't let them sit. Whereas with Straight Through Crew, there's bits where that, like, for example, there's a dancing scene at the rave that they go to, and they're just, he just lets it play for quite a while, for enough time to actually sink into it. And it's a really masterclass move where you don't, it's not something that people, I don't know, who don't, you know, like, we go into depth on films, but I noticed that, and I was like, oh, he's really let that just sit long enough for the right amount of time for you to be really in the moment. And that I was really impressed with. Lots of really great dialogue, and the characters are very believable. There's a wonderful chemistry, I think, between them. You know, much like Rosetta Stone, we reviewed earlier, there's this sort of dynamic between younger-ish characters, and it kind of felt quite genuine. I didn't watch it, but it reminded me of Skins. I know Skins was a TV show, and I sort of had seen bits and bobs of it, and characters sort of, you know, doing these things, and it kind of was back in that world. But this, was very much a product of the filmmaker, because like I said about Wood Falls, this film had the director's stamp on it. Like, it has a color to it. There's like this sort of quite intimate framing at times, and there's like a color tint on it that just feels like it's it feels really intense. And that, I think, was reflecting the sort of age and experience of the characters. Like because, you know, as you know, watching this as someone in their 30s would go, oh, yeah, clearly this is way too much drama for me. I would have been asleep in the corner, you know, what was it, cat corner or whatever it was. I'd be in there. But with the characters that are like, you know, this to them is pure life, all the angst and all the vibrating emotions that go with it, it very much is their world, and they're so into it that the filmmaking kind of reflected that really well.
Sense that the actors know, understand their characters really well, you know, which you think would be obvious for all actors, but they plugged into the characters and they just seem very natural and very believable as well. And that's something that really comes through really strongly, that they're comfortable with the characters they're playing, they understand them, they get them. And if you've got actors that understand the characters they're playing, it becomes much more effective and cohesive in the way it comes across. So very good.
There was also a few little references to Christmas films, which I always enjoy. So that ticked the box for me.
Didn't mention chocolate though, did it?
It did. It should be
disappointing Christmas. That, but there you go.
I mean, that's not really been done, is it? You know, Christmas chocolate, that deserves its own film.
It's good though.
It was good. Straight Through Cruise, one of those films that as soon as I settled into it, I was like, yeah, I know I'm in for a good time. It felt in capable hands the whole time. The acting was really strong, I think, across the board. There's a lovely little subplot about one of their friends who ends up he just stays in the local sort of social club with an older lady, and he's just gets completely curtailed off. And we've all got friends like that. You go on a night out and you go, what happened to you? Like, oh, I was playing pool with some random person.
They get diverse, don't they?
And I love that it's picking up on all. And I grew up in a rural area, so this was very reflective of that. Like, you've got nothing better to do than to get high and just enjoy the night, because nothing else is going to happen. But then also it didn't shy away from the dark side of that. Like, we see what happens to Aiden and like his state of mind and all the things that he gets himself into, that it's not afraid to showcase that as well. It's not all about
disturbing
a good time,
in places, wasn't it? It's quite
there was bits that were like, oh, that's quite terrifying, you know, what he's going through. So there was lots to it, but I would 100% recommend it. Definitely a strong recommendation. The film was on a password protected link, so I don't think it's available. But there is an Instagram page, Black Math Pictures, all one word. Or you can obviously check out our review and everything like that. But yeah, the director is David Campion. And hats off to him. Fabulous, fabulous job there. Really good. Now, with the release of Furiosa next month, we decided to travel back, not to the first Mad Max Fury Road film with Tom Hardy. We went way back. We went back all the way to the 70s to Mel Gibson, who is he is the 70s Tom Hardy, really, isn't he? That's what he
that's a good way of describing him, actually.
He was building himself up to become that. Or was it the other way around? So Mad Max, which is available currently on Now TV. Again, we're not affiliated with them, but it's just where you can watch it if you've got a subscription there. It's also available, I think, on Prime if you pay for it. So, what do you take this one, Brian? Mad Max, what's it about? Go for it.
What's it about, then? It directed by George Miller, starring Mel Gibson, of course, Joanne Samuel, Hugh Keysburn. Do you know what? I was too young to see this film when it first came out. It was an 18 rating. You know, you watch it online now. You see the banner, the health warning come up, don't you? Yeah. You know, this one says nudity, violence, alcohol use, smoking, foul language, and sexual content.
Those are all my favourite things.
I was going to say, anything guaranteed to make me watch, it wouldn't put me off, let's put it that way. But anyway, I was too young to see it in 79, only just, not by much. But so, a simple storyline again, and what I feel is a simple storyline. Australia, set in Australia many years in the future, has plunged into anarchy. There have been numerous wars and famines of various descriptions, and we have before us the desolate landscape. Max Rokantansky plays a police officer who hunts down the killer of his wife and child. I think that's probably it in a nutshell, isn't it, really? But still got it, you know. The film has still got it. It still packs a punch. It still has that edge. And like so many film franchises, first cuts are the deepest, Chris, aren't they, really? And I think it's a very good film. And even 1979, it's, 44 years old now. It doesn't look dated in that way. This film could have been made today.
Yeah, I think that's
easy.
One of the benefits of making a film that's sort of dystopian, right? Because I think it's like a version of what a future world might look like.
But
it doesn't necessarily date, because obviously if they set it in present day Sydney or whatever, you kind of go, oh, all right, well, yeah, it clearly looks dated. And I watched this in tandem with the Tom Hardy Fury Road that came out. And it's interesting kind of comparing the two, because they are dealing obviously with the same world. I haven't seen the ones in between. There were some films after this, wasn't there, like with Gibson and as a few other Mad Max. Have you seen those?
I've seen them, but not recently. I mean, Tina Turner was in one, wasn't she? She was Auntie Entity, if I remember rightly.
But just going on the two that I've seen, it was like, okay, yeah, I know I'm in the same world, but they are vastly different in terms of the way that they're presented.
Yeah. Well, it moves on, though, doesn't it? Any franchise, I mean, I have to accept grudgingly that franchises are the way forward, but certain films out today that conform with franchise aren't my thing. But this is, because the characters are actually quite strong. You know, we reviewed Ghostbusters Frozen Empire earlier on, which is a film franchise that started at the same time. See, back then, they seemed to have more weight and more character. You know, they were stronger, they were funnier, they were brighter. There aren't many laughs in Mad Max, but, you know, as an action movie, it's excellent. It really was. Wasn't Mel Gibson young in this film as well?
Yeah, I know. It took me a little while to go, is that Mel Gibson? Is that him?
Does he look old enough to drive a car even?
Yeah, he looks very fresh-faced.
Do his parents know he's out driving a car on a motorbike? Out, you know?
Yeah. Have they seen the list of things that this film contains? I mean,
yeah, I know, exactly.
It's like my Christmas list. I did enjoy it, and I found that... like I said, I think because of the genre, it lends itself to not feel dated, because it's like, oh, okay, it's like sci-fi, really. It's this dystopian world that you can submit yourself into. There were parts that I did find a bit more kind of like, it just felt they were limited, because they would be. It's an action film. You know, that was filmed in the 70s, but there were certain bits was, oh, okay, they've cut that quite badly, or they've when you compare it to Fury Road, the newer one, it was like, oh yeah, they're worlds apart, because that Fury Road is so slick, so fast, so bizarre.
It's rough and ready, isn't it? It's kind of almost like, you know, it's the equivalent in pop music to a demo, isn't it? It feels like it's got that kind of demo type feel. But you may well say that's the charm, that's the quality. That it
100%. And actually, a film that it reminded me of, not so much story-wise, but just tonally, was A Clockwork Orange. Because watch that, you get the sense of it being anarchic. And it does, I feel like, at one point it feels like a product of its time, but it also feels kind of, it can try, you know, traverse those decades, and you can still enjoy it. I got a little bit of that. I think it's one of those films that if you're a fan of this ongoing franchise, much like Ghostbusters, I think you have to go and watch this one. It made me want to watch the others as well. I was kind of like, oh, I might check out the others. They were you could get them on Amazon, but you got to pay for them. I was like, I'll see if I find myself at a loss on like a Friday, Saturday night, I might just sort of put one on.
Yeah.
If I'm not enjoying any rural hedonism, that is, you know.
I mean, nothing's going to match a bit of rural hedonism. Hedonism. I'm going with hedonism. You can have hedonism. I'll have hedonism.
Yeah. I think that's the most important part of this whole show, whole episode, is how do you pronounce it? Everyone get in touch. Come on. We'll do a poll.
Someone's going to know, aren't they? Someone's going to be definitive and say. It's probably neither. I bet it's hedonism or something.
Hedonism.
Like that.
Yeah. Although I like that. Hedonism.
Yeah.
Well, if this has been enough hedonism for you, we hope you've enjoyed the episode. Covered a lot of films. And thank you to all the indie filmmakers who sent us their movies to be reviewed. Thank you, Brian, for covering the cinema releases.
It's a pleasure, as always.
What was your film of the month?
Film of the month. The three we looked at, they're all equally good. But I think if I had to pick one, it would be Ghostbusters. Rise of the Empire. For pure entertainment.
Pure entertainment. They should put that on the poster. If they haven't done the poster yet, which I think they probably have, but if they haven't, on there, pure entertainment from Brian. All right.
In brackets, UK film review.
Yeah, they might not know which Brian, mightn't they? They might think it's Brian Blessed or something.
Well, yeah, I know. You never know. I mean, there are lots of Brians around. It's becoming a surprisingly popular name all of a sudden.
And I've not seen you and Brian Blessed in the same room, so...
You don't know what I could be doing in my spare time, do you?
Just saying. There it is. You heard it here first. Brian is Brian Blessed. He's not. Thank you for listening to UK Film Club. We are part of the UK Film Review podcast umbrella. So there are other shows that you can go enjoy, such as Amber and Joyce's terrific LGBTQ+ show, Gay Actually. They did a fabulous review of Priscilla recently. Queen of the Desert, you know, the original the drag film.
Terrence Stamp, wasn't it? Terrence Stamp? Yeah.
They covered that film brilliantly. Really terrific episode, so do go and listen to that. You've also got our other shows, such as The Scream Test with Rachel. So if you're a horror fan, she's done some incredible episodes on some classic horror franchises. There's also The Phantom Zone. So it's Chris, Ian and the gang. And yeah, they recently reviewed the Captain America film, The Winter Soldier, which I couldn't believe was 10 years old. And it's getting really, really worrying now when these Marvel films are making me feel old. terrifying.
Films do that though, don't they? You one of the first things I look for in a film, what year was it made? When I'm just sort of reading about it, and you think, oh my God, is it really that long ago?
I mean, and also life is so short. It makes you think life's so short. But really, the only best way to spend that is by listening to our podcast.
Absolutely.
So thank you to everyone who has listened. We are very, very grateful. And yeah, do drop us a comment. Get in touch. It's always nice to hear from you. And thank you to anyone that did send in comments and about the films that we've reviewed. And yeah, it means a lot to us. But yeah, this is... end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
Bye for now.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.